In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives. Amen. This is the kind of gospel text that makes you want to preach on the Old Testament reading. And so that's what I'm going to do. Without ignoring the gospel text. This Genesis story is a story that haunts us, even though we've forgotten it. It's a story of God who makes promises and doesn't seem to keep them. It's a story of two mothers and two sons who are competing for God's favor. It's a story about how hard it is for God's children to live together. It's a story about Abraham, the father of many nations, the father of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. The story begins with a vision. Abraham hears God saying, "I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. And I will make a covenant between me and your offspring. And I will be your God, and you will be my people." Abraham believed God. He trusted in that promise, and it was credited to him as righteousness. And so Abraham took his wife Sarah, and he lay with her. He went into her in the way that a man does with a woman, and the two became one flesh, and there was passion, and there was desire. But there were no children. Time after time, season after season, they wrestled with their desire. And the promise of God hung in the air like a fading echo. Sarah thought it was her fault. She thought that maybe God had made her barren, and that maybe she was getting in the way of God's promise. And so she said to Abraham, "Take my servant Hagar from Egypt, the slave girl from Africa, and go into her and see if you can have a child with her." And so Abraham lay with Hagar. He went into her in the way that a man does with a woman, and the two became one flesh, and Sarah and Hagar conceived and had a child. And she had contempt for her mistress, Sarah. Sarah could not abide this. In rage, she went to Abraham and she said, "May the harm that is done, that is put upon me, be put upon you. Why is it that my slave girl treats me with contempt? May God judge between you and me." And Abraham said, "She's your slave girl. You have the power over her. Do with her as you will." And so Sarah treated Hagar harshly. She made Hagar's life miserable, so Hagar ran away with the baby boy into the wilderness. The angel of the Lord sought them out. The angel of the Lord found Hagar and the boy by a spring, and the angel said, "Hagar, where have you come from, and where are you going?" Hagar said, "I have run away from my mistress Sarah." And the angel said, "Return to your mistress and submit to her. For I have heard your anguish. You should name your son Ishmael, which means God hears." And so Hagar names God. She names God El Roy, which means God sees. She's the first person, she's the first woman in the Bible to name God, and she's an Egyptian. She says God sees, and she goes back to Abraham and Sarah, and Abraham names his son Ishmael, which means God hears. When Abraham was 99 years old, and Sarah was 90, Abraham had a vision, and he heard God saying, "I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and I will make a covenant between my people and your people." between me and your people, and I will be your God, and you will be my people. And this will be a sign of that covenant. You will cut yourself. You will make a mark in your manhood that will, you will circumcise yourselves so that you'll be marked as sons of God. And then God says to Abraham and Sarah will bear a son. And Abraham thought, I'm an old man. And he fell on his face and he laughed and he laughed and he laughed. And he said, why can't you accept my son Ishmael? And God said, I will bless Ishmael and I will make him a great kingdom. But my promise is to your son Isaac. It's to your son, and you should name him Isaac because it means he laughs. And so that day Abraham took all the men of his household, his male relatives, his son Ishmael, and all his male slaves, and he cut them in the flesh. They circumcised their manhood. They were marked as sons of God. A little while later, Abraham was sitting in his tent in the heat of the day, in the shade of the oaks of Mamre, and he saw three men coming by. And he rushed out to meet them and he said, if I find favor with you, please come and eat with me. Let me show you hospitality. And the men said, we agreed. That sounds good. And so Abraham told Sarah to take three measures of the choicest flour and bake three loaves of bread. And he told one of his servants to take a calf and prepare the meat. And as the three men and Abraham ate in the shade of the oaks of Mamre, they began to talk. And one of them said, in a year's time, when we come back, Sarah will have a son. Now, Sarah and Abraham were old, advanced in age, and it had ceased to be with Sarah in the manner of women. And Sarah overheard what they were saying, and she said, I am old, and Abraham is old. Shall I now have pleasure? And she laughed, and she laughed, and she laughed. One of the men overheard her laughing. And one of them said, why is Sarah laughing? Is anything too wondrous for God? And Sarah said, I didn't laugh. And the men said, oh yes, you laughed. So Abraham took his wife Sarah, and he went into her as a man does with a woman, and the two became one flesh. And there was passion, and there was desire, and Sarah conceived a son. And she bore a son, and she named him Isaac, which means he laughs. And when she and Abraham heard the laughter of their little baby boy, they laughed, and they laughed, and they laughed. The child Isaac grew and was weaned. And one day, Ishmael was playing with his younger brother, Isaac, and Sarah observed them. And she thought to herself, this son of a slave will not inherit with my son. And she went to Abraham and tried to convince him to cast Hagar and Ishmael out into the wilderness. And Abraham was deeply anguished. And God said to him, I will bless your son Isaac, but I will bless Ishmael, and I will make him a great nation. But my promise is through your son Isaac. And so Abraham takes a skin of water, three loaves of bread, and he casts Hagar and Ishmael out into the wilderness. And they wander and they wander until the bread is gone and there is no more water. And Ishmael is on the verge of death. And Hagar places him in the shade of a bush. And she lifts her voice and cries out and weeps. And the angel of the Lord hears her and says, "Hagar, what troubles you? God has heard the voice of the boy. God will multiply his descendants greatly until the multitude, so that you cannot count them for the multitude of them." And then God opens Hagar's eyes and she sees a spring. And the boy grows and develops and lives in the wilderness and becomes a great archer. And that is where the Jewish telling of the story ends, as far as Ishmael is concerned. The way the Muslims tell the story at that point is that that spring, Hagar and Ishmael set up, they began, that was their new home. And that Abraham used to come and visit them at their new home. And that that village, that dwelling, where it eventually becomes Mecca. And that Ishmael and Abraham build the Kaaba in Mecca. I mean, which is the holy shrine that's in Mecca. And Ishmael is seen in Islam as being, that's how they trace their lineage to Abraham. In Judaism, Isaac, God makes the covenant with Isaac. And Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau, who are twins. And Jacob steals the birthright, and then Jacob has 12 sons, which becomes the 12 tribes of Israel. And we are left with these questions. Can you trust God? Does God show favorites? And how is it that Jews and Christians and Muslims can live together? Both Judaism, Christianity, and Islam take this story of Abraham and they say, yes, you can trust God. Against all odds, you can trust God. It becomes kind of a formative story of faith and the nature of faith in all of those traditions. They also, curiously, in their own way, answer the question, does God show favorites? In the affirmative, yes, God shows favorites. The Jews are God's chosen people. And that begins in this story where God says, I will be your God and you will be my people. And it's what distinguishes them from the rest of the rest of the nations. That is deeply ingrained into to Jewish identity. Christianity came along and said, yes, the Jews are God's chosen people, but things shifted with Jesus. Now there's no longer Jew nor Greek, male nor female, slave nor free, right? But we're all children of God as long as you follow Jesus. And the Muslims came along 600 years after Jesus and said, well, no, Jews and Christians are people of the book. They have our story. They share our story. But the Jews and the Christians kind of got the story wrong. It kind of got messed up over time. And the real story is the story about Ishmael. And so all three of them say, yes, God does have favorites. And we're the favorite. And we're left with this question of how is it that God's children get along and can get along with each other. What I'm struck by with the story of Hagar and Ishmael is that this is a story written by Jewish writers. It's a story written by people who feel that they are God's chosen people. That God has made a covenant with them. That's what this whole story is about. And yet Hagar, the Egyptian, is the one who gets to name God. And the angel of the Lord pursues Ishmael time and again. It's a stunning thing for Jewish writers to be writing, that God does not forget Ishmael, even especially later, because the Ishmaelites and the Israelites are at loggerheads with each other. They're always in conflict. And yet they're able to say in their scriptures that no, God still favored. God still blessed the Ishmaelites. It's a stunning fact in this story. And maybe it provides a way. Because I don't think there is a good answer to that question of how is it that Jews and Christians and Muslims can live together. In fact, our gospel text talks about, I mean, it's a shocking text because it says, Jesus says, you know, I did not come to bring peace, but I came to bring the sword. Father against his son, mother against daughter, brother against brother. It's written in a time when the church is in, when the early Jesus movement is in the midst of persecution. So it makes sense that it would be persecution, but they are being persecuted by their fellow brothers, the Jews. It's a moment where already then Jews and that early Christians are at odds with each other and they can't get along. And the way, the message, the point of Jesus is what he says in the gospel text is that you need to take up your cross and follow me. That whoever loses his life or her life will find it. At least within our own faith tradition, that's the central way we have of navigating some of this conflict. Of entering into that difficult space where there is tension and conflict. And being willing to risk losing what we hold on to so dearly as a way of discovering and opening up ourselves to something new. Amen.